Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Well, intangible assets are exactly that. They're intangible, meaning they lack physical substance and can't really be seen, heard, or touched. Some might say you might be able to feel them, as compared to your more traditional assets like, say, machinery, furniture, and land, and even your office desks. These might take the form of your business patents, copyrights, intellectual property, even brand goodwill, and they're also an important part of your company's value. But the fact that they're intangible makes them tricky to evaluate and could leave room for distortions to valuation. So how might retail investors approach these intangible assets when making their decisions on company valuations? And how might business owners seek to better value their company's intangibles? Well, we're joined today on Money FM 89.3 by Paul Adams. He is the CEO of EverEdge, which is an intangible asset specialist that consults for provides consulting services to firms and also specializes in buying and selling intangible assets. They've been around since 2007, started in Auckland, New Zealand, and now have their headquarters in Singapore and serve about 1,000 clients over the last 13 years. Paul, welcome to the show, and I hope I got all of that right in terms of the description of intangibles and also your firm.
Yes, thanks very much for having me on the show. And yep, that is perfect.
Okay, great. So again, we did start off with defining intangible assets. Please feel free to add on to that definition if you want. But talk to us about how much space intangible assets actually take up on a balance sheet now versus, say, 10 years ago. And just a caveat, this was one of the biggest frustrations for me when I was going through business school and trying to tackle accounting and balance sheets also. It just figure out what these intangible assets are, what their actual value was. Can you talk to us just exactly how much space they take up on a balance sheet now as compared to the recent past?
Yeah, well, it's a really good question. And it actually gets to the heart of the matter, because if you look at actually intangible assets are frequently actually off balance sheet. And in fact, that's one of the big problems. If you look at the accounting treatment of intangible assets and we boil it down, what we really find is either intangible assets are completely off balance sheet, so they just simply don't feature at all, or they go under goodwill, so they go under this rubric, this umbrella term of goodwill, and they essentially get lost under this amorphous term. We don't really know what's in there. Or alternatively, they go on at cost. And the problem with putting intangible assets on a balance sheet at cost is there's basically no correlation between the cost of an intangible asset and its value. Now, that's very different than with a physical tangible asset, where there's oftentimes a very definitive relationship between cost and value. So what that means is that in most cases with most companies, actually you find whatever's on their balance sheet with respect to intangible assets is generally wrong. Now, if we go up a higher level for a second and we look at what percentage of value intangible assets make up, if we look at, say, the S&P 500, the broadest measure of the market, what we find is that intangible assets now account for about 87% of the entire value of the companies on the S&P 500.
That's 87%, you said.
87%.
Got it. Okay.
And if we look at, say, if we then strip out the real estate holdings of those companies, so we say, okay, well, let's take away the real estate holdings. What percentage of intangible assets are there now? Intangible assets climb up to about 96%. If we look at the top five companies by market cap, which are all tech companies, then we climb up to about 98.2%. And so what we're basically finding is that intangible assets are most of the value of the modern economy and modern companies, and yet they are not reflected on the balance sheet in this way at all. In fact, many companies have very limited balance sheet write-up of intangible assets at all.
So do you think that many of the accountants today as well, and many companies, do you think that they're leaving these valuations of intangibles off the balance sheets because they're finding it very difficult to value them because of the conventional valuation methods you have, like, say, DCF or even your discounted cash flows or using, say, other valuation methods that may be out there, even book value, for instance?
Well, yes and no. I think that valuation techniques are certainly a problem because intangibles are very difficult to value. But the real driver behind why intangibles are actually off balance sheet or are incorrectly recorded within companies is that the accounting standards tell us that that's what we have to do. So the way that the accounting standards treat intangibles, as I said, is they're either off balance sheet entirely or we put them under goodwill or we put them under cost. And that's what actually leads to this problem. Now, companies are not actually able to just put things onto their balance sheet and put intangible assets onto the balance sheet, except in particular circumstances, and that's when we run into the valuation issue. But the primary reason why these assets are not there in the first place is because the accounting standards say we're not allowed to. Now, the reason why the accounting standards are that way is because I think the accountants realize that there's this real problem around how do you value intangible assets. And so rather than deal with the uncertainty of having these assets on the balance sheet, they've chosen to simply ignore them. Now, that worked when intangibles were only 17% of all company value, which was back in, say, 1975. But when they're 87% of all company value or 90% of all company value, I don't think that's really viable anymore.
All right. So here's the thing, Paul. As you know, no two intangible assets are alike. If you even compare, for instance, patents to brand value or even to, say, intellectual
data.
Property, data, I mean, these are all very different. It's like comparing apples to monkeys, for instance, right? How do you, would you advise retail investors who want to get a better idea of what the worth of a company's intangibles are? And will this differ based on industry, based on the intangible class, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it's a really vexed question. And there are multiple problems here. The first problem here is just the scarcity of data. Because the intangible assets aren't on the balance sheet, we just don't have a lot of data to go on. They're typically not called out. They're under goodwill, etc. So we, unlike, say, real estate holdings or plant equipment or inventory or a bunch of other items that we would find on those balance sheets, intangibles are simply not there at all. So it's difficult in the first place just to even get your hands on data, the data that you might want to use to evaluate the intangibles. The second thing is, as we've already talked about, is the problem of valuation. So there are, because this is an area of accounting and investment that has been largely ignored because of the accounting standards until recently. And, you know, if we look at what Warren Buffett says, Warren says, look, accounting is the language of business. And so the language, there just hasn't been an adequate language to describe intangibles for a very long time, that they've been largely ignored. And so what that meant is that the valuation methodologies are really pretty poor as well. So there hasn't been a lot of focus in the space until quite recently. And it's only been in really the last sort of 5 to 10 years that companies have begun to say, actually, regardless of what the accounting standards say, I need to understand what's happening with my intangibles. I need to understand whether or not I am investing in the right R&D project, what I should pay for that company over there that is mostly intangible. Now, are there techniques that retail investors can use? I would love to be able to say to you, yeah, there is. You run this algorithm or you take this ratio, but unfortunately, there's just not at this stage. Because exactly what you said, each of these intangibles tends to be very unique. They're discrete. They tend to be specific. There's no quick and easy methodology like a PE ratio or something like that that you can use to say, well, this is the price of that intangible. You have to look at them in a case-by-case, company-by-company basis.
All right, we're swinging to Paul Adams, the CEO of EverEdge, which specializes in providing consulting services to companies with regards to figuring out intangible assets. Paul, in your opinion, what are some of the trickiest intangible assets to value?
Yeah, Matt, we have valued all sorts of things. One of the examples that we had was a 30 years worth of brain scans, right, which is a whole lot of brain scan data that a client had brought to us, all the way through to brands, things like water rights and garbage disposal rights. These are technically intangible assets because they are a right that has no physical property. Right now, one of the harder ones to value is data and also brand. Now, brand, because brands have very high what we call velocity, and that is you can build a brand very quickly overnight. If we see what Kylie Jenner did, for example, with her makeup brand, went from virtually nothing to being a multi-billion-dollar company in an incredibly short space of time. And then you have other things where brands collapse virtually overnight. We look at, for those who remember Arthur Anderson, the value of that brand collapsed overnight. So brands are difficult because you have very high brand velocity and they can be really buffeted around by market conditions and by particular factors for the company. The other one is data, which is challenging because just about every company we're dealing with right now is saying, look, I'm sitting on this pile of data. It's got to be worth something, right? And the conventional techniques for valuing data are really misleading. So you sometimes see companies say things like, well, you know, we've got 100 million pieces of this kind of data, and I went on the internet and I was told that they're each worth $5, so I must have $500 million worth of data. And that's a ridiculous methodology for valuing data. So data presents some particular challenges as well, because data, you have to build end use cases for each of the data sets and what you're going to do with it, how you're going to exploit it, are you allowed to exploit it? There's a whole lot of questions that need to be asked there. So you're right, you need to use different methodologies depending upon the nature of the asset or the intangible asset that you're trying to value.
Okay, so Paul, I want to zero in on this thing you brought up, brand value, very difficult. Now, you have said that companies might be undervaluing themselves by not taking into full account the actual value of these intangibles. But could the opposite be possible also? We've seen a lot of these IPOs last year, for instance, underperform because many were criticizing the over-ballooned valuations that might have been based off of brand value or maybe an overestimation of these intangibles. Even the U.S. President, Donald Trump, has argued that he's worth more than he actually is right now. And most of that is actually hinging on the argument that his brand value is bigger than it actually is. When you take all this to account, is there a risk that there are companies out there that might be using the subjectivity, for lack of a better term, regarding valuing intangibles to try to bloat some of their valuations and maybe even unwittingly deceive some of their investors?
Look, I think there's absolutely no question that valuation of intangible assets tends to result in, you find most companies are either undervalued or overvalued. One thing you can almost say for certain is that the numbers are not correct. And that is obviously very problematic, especially, as I said, for retail investors who don't have access to the more sophisticated tools and modeling you can use to value some of these things. With respect to companies that are overstating their value, I absolutely agree with you. I think there's no question that there are companies out there on the various exchanges that are hyping what they're doing. They're hyping their models, et cetera, to try to drive up their valuation. The interesting thing is, though, I don't actually think that they're specifically doing that with reference to their intangible assets. What they're doing is they're telling a story to the market and to the street around what the entity is worth in and of itself. I don't think they're doing it on a build-up, bottom-up sort of case of analysis of their intangible assets. And the reason why is that I think if you did that, you would actually begin to see that in many cases, the emperor has no clothes. So if you look behind some of these overhyped IPOs and things, and you look at their performance and so forth, and then you actually do the kind of analysis we do for intangible assets and say, okay, at the end of the day, what an intangible asset does is it confers upon you competitive advantage or competitive edge. What is your true competitive edge in this marketplace? And then you begin to look at those companies, and what you begin to find is actually oftentimes there's not as much competitive edge as you might have otherwise thought. There's not as many intangible assets as you'd think. They're weaker than they actually appear. And when you run that analysis, actually you come to those exactly the kind of conclusions that you're mentioning, is that many of these companies are in fact overvalued, but it's precisely by doing the analysis, the intangible assets, that you can reach that conclusion rather than buying the narrative that's been sold to the store, been sold to the market, that somehow the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
All right, so Paul, which brings us back to my earlier question also. How would investors actually protect themselves from not getting fooled, or perhaps is there a way for them to actually better spot whether or not the emperor doesn't have clothes, to use your terms?
Yes, absolutely. I think at the end of the day, what intangible assets do is they enable companies to enjoy superior competitive edge or competitive advantage relative to their peers. So, for example, a company that develops a novel new pharmaceutical compound that takes out a patent over that compound, and that patent is ultimately granted, and they also enjoy, let's say, FDA approval so they can market that drug, and they also have a whole lot of data that supports their testing. That is what we would describe as a very strong intangible asset position, because if you think about it, they've got at least three different intangible assets in there. They've got a patent, they've got an FDA approval, or they've got a regulatory approval, and they've got data. And what that's going to mean is that they're able to sell that drug at superior prices relative to their competitors who are unable to do so, for example. Now, that tells you, those things that I mentioned are all fundamentally intangible assets, and they're things that derive and drive competitive edge from that business. So if I'm a retail investor, the question I'm really asking myself, if I can't get into the sophisticated modeling, et cetera, that is involved when we do valuation of intangible assets, I'd be saying, step back and ask yourself, what are the real drivers of competitive edge in this company or competitive advantage? Are those rooted back in strong intangible assets, data, content, brands, software code, trade secrets, confidential information, regulatory approvals? Because if they are, then that company's likely to outperform its peers over the long run. If they're not, if they're a bit of a straw man or hollow, or there's no real substance to them, I think back to the dot-com days of pets.com, for example, there was nothing really there at the end of the day, then that should be ringing alarm bells. In much the same way as that if you invested in a real estate company, it turned out that their real estate portfolio was very lacking and that had poor properties and things, you'd be worried. It's the same kind of thing. It's just we need to bring a different lens to bear when we're analyzing intangible assets than if we're analyzing tangible ones.
Paul Adams, CEO of EverEdge, thank you so much for walking us through the world of intangible assets. Appreciate the time, sir, and good afternoon to you.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.